greater sky, the sky of my youth.
Brighter sun, always loveliest when it's leaving.
Hi, I'm Deborah Lou Harder. You're listening to a scene from opening night of The Revolution of Steve Jobs at the Santa Fe Opera. At the end of the premiere run, I had a chance to sit down with composer Mason Bates in the stunning setting of that opera house. We talked about his journey with the Santa Fe Opera, his work as a DJ and composer of electronica, and how being a one-time choir boy led him to composing and music's grandest form.
Mason, thanks so much for spending time with us, and I just want to congratulate you. This is the end of your premiere run of your first opera. It must be an incredible experience. When you look back on this, what will be your number one memory, do you think, of the evolution of the revolution of Steve Jobs?
Well, I've been coming to Santa Fe Opera for almost 20 years. I came here in 2000 and started to see a lot of new works over the years, and I presented one half-finished opera years ago to the artistic administration here, and they passed on that. And short story is, this is the end of a very long journey with Santa Fe, and I will remember all of the wonderful summers I've had coming here, seeing music from past and present, and having this piece happen, which is the result of a lot of misfires and false starts operatically, is a dream come true.
The reaction I've gotten from so many orchestra members I've talked to is that they're so impressed and very moved by the music. And it's been a huge hit with audiences. They have had to add extra shows to the run, which is kind of unheard of for new work, especially in opera. Yet the critical reception has been very mixed. So you've gotten some very positive reviews and some not so positive. What do you make of all this, and how do you handle reviews and criticism?
Well, you can't have all of the buzz and excitement without some critics wanting to throw daggers. What's been interesting, though, is that the couple that have come that have, you know, been rather cynical about it have really been pretty isolated. You know, I mean, you've got people like the Financial Times to the LA Times raving about it, talking about the audience response. You've even got some people referring back to those East Coast reviews in a very negative way. I got to say that I've seen many operas come that are really fine pieces that have a really tough time, and the general critical response has been pretty solid. I think what's important, though, is that we came into this really not needing to rely on critics. I mean, honestly, we had already had a really strong box office response, and then when we started getting all the positive word of mouth after the dress rehearsal, we added a show, and we have a recording lined up and two other partners. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see what different people write, and you know, like bacteria, there's good bacteria and bad bacteria. But really, the thing that's been important to everybody on the creative team is the longevity of the piece now that we have recording and partners. And also, of course, we really appreciate the response from very different entry points, whether it be the story of Steve Jobs as a technologist or the story of Steve Jobs as somebody who didn't really acknowledge his cancer.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating life story that you put into music in a very unique way. I just want to ask you a little bit about your DJing. You're known for creating soundscapes and happenings. Does your DJ work serve maybe like improvisation did for Beethoven? Or is it something different? And if you had to choose between DJing and composing, which one would you choose?
Well, it's true that DJing for me is a much more free experience than creating classical pieces. In a way, DJing, even though it seems so different from classical music, it has a lot of resonances with it. I mean, one of the biggest things is that a lot of electronic dance music is not vocal. And it's actually, you know, instrumental in that it's just sort of rhythms and harmonies and textures. You know, those electronic sounds are so beautiful. And that's something that we specialize in classical music. And that was why, as a DJ, I started to get interested in the idea of integrating them. To me, they both are absolutely key to my musical personality. It's hard to imagine one without the other. With classical music, I have to do with 100 people, and it can take a year to have a piece premiered, but that experience is a beautiful one, and I think the orchestra is one of the great human creations. DJing, I can get, you know, immediate feedback from a crowd. I just have to deal with records, so that gives me an outlet, like you mentioned, with the improvisation at the time of Mozart or something, that I don't have, and I like balancing those two.
So was it hard to go from electronica to writing for the human voice with that in mind?
Well, little known is that I grew up in the Episcopal Church tradition and actually came to music through singing in choirs. In fact, my first composition mentor, Hope Armstrong Erb, was my choral director. And then as I became known as a symphonist and started integrating my, you know, DJing and electronica into symphonic music, that became my focus for many years. But my early experience writing for the voice, writing for chorus, is so close to my heart. So I think when I came into this opera, a lot of people said, wow, I didn't know you could write for the voice. And I said, well, I'm a sleeper cell choir boy.
So we might hear some liturgical references in some of your vocal writing. For those strictly classical audiences new to your work and trying to understand how you create, is there anything in your compositional process that equates to the rigor of, say, counterpoint in Bach?
Yeah, I know what you mean. You know, you look at some of the old styles and there's not only a rigor to it, but it was a known rigor. Like, people would work within this kind of format, whereas today it seems like anybody can do anything. I will say, when you start to look closer into contemporary music, there's not a systematized rigor, but there's so many different opportunities for craft. Example is in this piece, the integration of electronic sounds, the human voice, and the orchestra takes a huge amount of experience to make that work. I mean, I've been working with orchestras for almost 25 years. I mean, that first piece that I wrote in high school was, you know, 93. And I've learned how to orchestrate around electronics. I've learned how to handle elements of electronic production that, while they aren't necessarily as rigorous in a systematized way as counterpoint, they are very much crafts in their own right. I think one of the challenges of being a contemporary composer is that you have to almost kind of create your own system to work in. And for me, integrating electronics was something that was a vision for me that nobody else was really doing on a large scale. And I had no precedents really to follow. And now that I've been doing that for about 15 years, there is something of a system for people to respond to if a younger composer is doing something like that and says, hey, I want to add electronics.
So you're almost world building like in science fiction.
Well, you know, the symphony and the opera house have always been evolving. And that's the thing that I find so fascinating about these mediums is that, you know, there's always been technology, stagecraft in opera, or, you know, acoustic engineering in the building of instruments. And I think we sort of forget about that sometimes in the 21st century, where the orchestra might seem like a set thing. And I really believe that it will continue to evolve. And the use of digital sounds, use of everything from techno to actual field recordings, or in the case of this opera, actual Apple II sounds that are kind of integrated into the piece, that seems like a natural evolution to me.
So I think along those lines, one of the very cool things in the Santa Fe Opera program book this year is the listing of orchestra personnel, where your name appears under electronica as first-time musician with the orchestra. And I've spoken with a lot of the players, and it's clear that you're very much accepted as a member of the band. Tell me about that.
It's so thrilling to be part of the performance of my music. You know, I sit with a couple laptops and a drum pad and, you know, some audio interfaces in the orchestra. And I do that for all the premieres of my pieces. And then as they get out into the world and get performed without me, there's like a laptop version. It's been unique for me to perform in the pit of an opera house orchestra. As a kid, I would go and peek over in the ballet and stuff. And it was like, if there was fairy dust anywhere, it was in the pit of an orchestra, of an opera house or a ballet. So this has been especially interesting because, you know, I'm needing to see what's going on in the opera, needing to hear things. And so, interestingly, the Santa Fe Opera has a moat, like a little river that separates the pit from the audience. This was part of the original architectural design of the house. It's a really cool feature. It makes getting out into the house complicated. So they built for me this ladder that goes right up from the pit over this like moat of water. And every time I was crossing it, I felt like I was breaking through the fourth wall.
Speaking about your premieres where you're in the orchestra, do you have a way of notating the sounds that you fire with your laptops that you can pass on to another performer for the times when you need a performer to be working the computers, but you can't be there? Somebody else has to be in the band, not you.
That's right. It's been key to my focus in my electronic contribution to not make this about whether I'm there. And so pieces of mine like Mothership get played, you know, 50, 60 times a year. And that's because not only are they pieces that I very carefully worked out on an aesthetic way, but also I figured out a way to kind of bake down all of the electronics into a kind of Betty Crocker that can be downloaded as a sampler and triggered on a laptop by a percussionist. So when I'm there, it's kind of like live cooking. But if you really want to have an impact on the field and change it and enter one day maybe parts of the canon, you have to make it very, very easy to do. And that's where the laptop in a box comes out of.
Does it show up in the score?
Yeah, so there's like an electronic staff, like a percussion staff, and you know you have to find very creative ways of notating it. Essentially, you know, it'll never look as cool as it sounds, but you need to show the conductor what's happening. And the part that the laptop performer gets will say things like, you know, hit letter A at this time, do this at that time. And, you know, it's something that percussionists in a way are sort of used to doing. I mean, they might go from a bass drum to a triangle to a wind machine. So they're used to kind of dealing with strange instruments. And for many of my pieces, now there's a laptop they got to deal with.
Oh, that's great. What's next for you? Another opera, maybe?
I want to give myself a little perspective before I jump into another opera. You know, I've been thinking about a couple different projects, and, you know, one of them is for the National Symphony for next season. And that's an orchestra that's very close to my heart because I'm composing residence at the Kennedy Center, and also they premiered one of my biggest early works, Liquid Interface. So writing, you know, there in the nation's capital, close to where I grew up in Richmond, Virginia, is very special for me, and I'm looking pretty excitedly towards that, although I told myself, wait till we get through the last performance before I start writing anything else.
Now, when you're at home just kind of relaxing, is there an instrument you go to just to doodle on, like a piano, for instance?
My instrument is piano. I'm not very good at it, but I certainly use it as a way of finding sounds. I also will doodle around on acoustic guitar, which is an instrument that figures prominently in this piece. It's sort of the alter ego of Steve Jobs. I've recently got interested in some analog synthesizers because you can, you know, change the sound with one hand while you're playing the notes with the other. So I think it's important, you know, a painter has a studio full of paints. I have, you know, a studio full of electronic instruments and a piano and guitar and even a couple other random things like a didgeridoo. And now that I have little kids, they're going in there and messing around with them. So it's fun to experiment with a lot of different sounds. I think it's important to have acoustic sounds around you, not just a computer.
I agree. Something that doesn't need a plug, maybe.
Yeah, and has some overtones.
That's true. Well, Mason, thank you so much for spending time with us. I really appreciate it. And good luck with all your projects, and can't wait to see the opera.
Well, thanks for coming, and it's an honor to talk to you.
Everything you hear on WRTI is